with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
Oh, good afternoon, everybody, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to the broadcast of Reclaiming Authenticity, finding one's courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. Very excited to be with you here today, this Friday afternoon, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and high noon Pacific Standard Time. So each and every week, these broadcasts focus on the integration of spirituality and our mental health, all within the context of our relationships with ourselves and kind of the internalized messages that we have with ourselves and the relationships that we have with others, and certainly our relationship with God or the divine. I'm Dr. James Houck, and if you would like more information about me or to leave me your comments about today's show, I invite you to visit the website. It's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity, all one word. So www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And if you'd like to be part of today's show, I invite you to call in. It's 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And just in case you're not able to be with us this full hour, these broadcasts are now podcasted. And in case you want to go back and listen again, or you want to go back into the archives and listen to previous shows, I certainly encourage you to do that. And for those of you who are new to the program, I'd just like to say, first of all, welcome. And you'll hear me say on more than one occasion that I am certainly a very strong believer that all of us come into this world already equipped and graced with everything that we need in this life in terms of our skills or our talents, our giftedness, our strengths, character traits, etc. And yet, as we go along in life, or maybe due to some unpleasant experiences, things that we see coming and things that we are blindsided with, we may tend to hide our giftedness, or we tend to push our talents and our strengths way down so that others cannot see that, or if we think that they might steal them. Or perhaps we were told that we're not good at anything, or we'll never amount to anything, or whatever other voice we heard telling us that there's really nothing special to us. And that is just wrong. At any rate, we do not realize our giftedness when we start to take in these kinds of negative messages. And we go through this life actually functioning from a place of that woundedness or that victimhood. And we just keep hearing those tired, old messages just playing over and over in our minds. And it just gets reinforced from things that, let's say, from our perspective, don't appear to be working out, or they are not falling into place, or it's just one struggle after another, and we slide into this victimization. And we realize that we go through life this way. Instead of approaching our life or being in relationships with others from a place of healing or a place of wholeness, or and definitely embracing our hachetas or our uniqueness. And this is something that I believe everybody has, this uniqueness to them, no matter when they were born in the century or however long you want to go back in history. We all come into this world with these gifts and graces, talents, skills, and character traits. And that is the key that I have found in helping us not only understand ourselves, but also helping others understand themselves, and for everybody to realize that there is so much more to us than what we have become so far. And this is actually what reclaiming authenticity is all about, and helping people find the courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. And it's very specific that I mention courage, because it does take courage to look at who you are. It does take courage to understand all the layers and layers of pain and suffering and or humiliation or whatever it is that's keeping the very best of you from coming out. And so it does take courage to change. It does take courage to look at those things in our lives. It does take courage to say, you know what, whatever's happened to me in the past, that's not the end all be all to me. In fact, there is so much more to me that I have yet to discover. And with that understanding and embracing that, we find that a wonderful transformation is allowed to occur, where we can embrace all that we have become so far, as well as reaching out for so much more that we may have yet to reclaim that has always been in us. So, well, how is your heart today? As I said last week, welcome to December. I hope your heart is well. I hope that you are well. I hope your heart is strong. I hope that if you are even struggling today, that you will be able to find rest and comfort and the inner peace that you need. And certainly, you know, inner peace is vital to us, because this time of the year, with all the hustle and bustle and the noise and the chaos and so forth, it's hard to find that quiet time where we can just listen to ourselves and just going inward and finding that peace, that inner sanctum. And I'd also, before we begin this broadcast, I just would like to wish everybody a happy Hanukkah, especially for those who observe Hanukkah. And may all your wishes certainly come true. And I was talking with several people earlier this week, and, you know, I was just asking simple questions about, like, what, okay, I know the history of Hanukkah, but does it still carry with it the same significance as, you know, today as it did, you know, back when it originated? And it was really explained to me that when you think about the celebration of Hanukkah itself, it clearly communicates something more about the human spirit that survives, even in the worst tragedies. In fact, it allows people to rebuild their lives that have been shattered in some way, or it even helps people to rebuild broken institutions or injured nations. And really, that is the power of faith and the light of an inextinguishable hope. And so again, I wish everybody a happy Hanukkah. And also on that note, last month, the month of November, Hindus and Sikhs and Jains all over the world celebrated Diwali. And if you've never attended a Diwali celebration, it is a joyous occasion. And with one of its core themes being the triumph of light over darkness, and how good triumphs over evil. And it is a festival of lights that's held on the darkest night during a dark time of the year. And that's when people really need light, not just to see, but this light that is connected to hope and life. And when you think about it, how often do our celebrations involve light or even lighting candles? And it's more than just lighting lamps and candles. And in fact, it's the power of faith and that light of inextinguishable hope that fills our hearts. So if you are celebrating a birthday this month, be generous with lighting candles. Make your wish, blow out your candles, and let us all celebrate life that continues from one generation after another. Now, speaking of this inextinguishable hope, this is exactly the theme for the broadcast today. So, although I typically wait until after the break to take calls, I'm going to take your calls periodically before and after the break today. So, you don't have to wait to call in. You feel free to call in anytime. Okay? Well, let's shift gears a little bit and begin today's broadcast with a question. It's kind of a fun question, hopefully. What is the weirdest Christmas list you have ever seen? What's the weirdest Christmas list you've ever seen? Okay, give you a second to think about that. And the reason I start off with this question is last week I came across a couple of different letters to Santa Claus. And it's not really that these letters are weird. It's more like they're cute. But they are certainly typical of a child's perspective when it comes to, well, I want to write a letter to Santa Claus. You know, I want, and here's my Christmas list. And I have a couple here. I'll just read them to you. Like I said, they are cute. The first one is from a boy who's age 7. This all goes all the way back to 1996. He starts off his list, Dear Santa, please send me a Sega Genesis. I also want my two front teeth and the tape of this song. I also want a little money, like $75 in quarters. I don't know what he's going to do with that, but hey, it's his list. And Nintendo tapes, some roller skates, and a picture of a girl. So, like I said, he's age 7, so it's kind of funny. Another list I saw, list these in order. Dear Santa, I would like presents, wrapping paper, decorations, a Christmas tree, Christmas dinner, Christmas breakfast, and Christmas lunch. Okay. And the last one here. This is from a little girl, and she writes, Dear Santa, will you please give me this year a pink wig like the ones found in the dollar store? I'll have to take her word for that because I haven't seen any wigs in the dollar store, but it's her list. And she says, I'd also like an iPad Touch, the DVD Monsters University, which I had seen, so I like it. I can highly recommend it. She also wants a caramel apple and cake and poppycock. And I don't know if you're all familiar with poppycock. It's kind of like a toffee, caramel, salty, popcorn, peanuts. It's kind of a slight variation of Cracker Jack, but it's kind of just a nice snack food, which you're going to spend the rest of the day or the night picking that out of your teeth. She also wants a cat toy. She'd like a dress. She'd also like some caramels and the Amazing World of Gumball poster and the Amazing World of Gumball shirt. And the last thing that she put on her list for Santa Claus is, I would like some bacon. So you really can't beat that. You know, bacon goes good with everything, you know, and like I said, it was her list. So, yeah, just interesting. You know, hopefully, you know, we run lists in our heads and everything and what we would like. And, you know, but if we would look back on, let's say, the Christmas list that we made as children, hopefully, in hindsight, we realize that we grew out of these lists. And as we grow older, our tastes have become just a little bit more sophisticated, just a little bit more practical. But what's on your Christmas list this year? What are you hoping for? What are you wishing that your loved ones or Santa Claus get you? Have you started making a list, or are you one of these last-minute shoppers? Well, for just a second, I just want you to imagine that out of everything that you have ever asked God for in your life, when was the last time you asked for hope? Okay, I'll say that again. Out of everything that you've ever asked God for in your life, when was the last time you asked for hope? H-O-P-E, hope. Well, in spite of COVID this year, we are in one of the busiest seasons. And as we are in the celebration of Hanukkah and preparing for the coming of Christmas 2020, many people might be getting into a panic over the realization that there's so much to do and yet so little time to get everything done. And when you think about it, for many people, what is promoted as the most wonderful time of the year often becomes one of the darkest times of the year. I mean, for some, this holiday season is a season of loneliness, or it's a season of being separated from family members or loved ones. You know, some people might think of this season as a season of hurt or disappointment. And some, you know, might even see this season as a season of despair or frustration and hopelessness. Yet, for those who know the stories of both Hanukkah and Christmas, we know that the backdrop upon which these stories were painted were during times that were filled with incredible, incredible darkness. And the people, you know, back in the day, the people were in search of something to believe in. People who wanted to feel connected and accepted and loved for who they are. And their souls were actually starving for something more than just, let's say, the latest fad or the latest trend. They were actually hungry for something that provides real nourishment for the soul. And this is where the message of hope comes in. It is a light that shines in the darkness. And hope is very powerful when it comes to sustaining life. I don't know if you've ever heard this old truism, but it's something that's always stayed with me ever since I was a teenager. It says that we can live about 4 minutes without air, we can live about 4 days without water, and we can live about 40 days, give or take, without food, but we cannot last 4 seconds without hope. I mean, it's that vital to us. You know, when we are searching or groping for hope in perhaps all the wrong places, and we're perhaps looking at things that might, you know, we want to substitute hope for, that if I just get this or if I just get that, if I only have this or if I only have that, then I'll be content and peaceful and I'll have hope. And hope is not necessarily found in those things. But hope is something that springs eternal. It springs internal. Hope is something that we know when we have it, and we also know when we don't have it. We can be filled with despair quite easily. But we have to live in hope every day, just like we have to eat every day, or we have to breathe, or we have to drink water, and so forth. Hope is very powerful when it does come to sustaining our lives and the lives of others. Well, hope is a word used these days to mean more like a wish. And therefore, its strength, the strength of hope, is then the strength of a person's wish or desire. But if you look in Scripture, hope is the confident expectation of what God has promised, and its strength is in God's faithfulness. You see, hope is always linked to what God does in God's timing. And hope isn't necessarily, you know, something to be associated with, like getting the warm fuzzies. It's a strong, unshakable foundation. And the spiritual power of hope can help us overcome anything in our lives. In fact, some people go so far as to say that hope is a lifeline from God, given to us at just the right time, exactly when we need it. And that's not bad. I like that definition, too. I really do. Also, hope is understood these days as an outcome that makes our lives better in some way. It not only can help make a difficult situation, let's say, more tolerable, but also hope can actually improve our lives. Because when we are able to imagine, let's say, a better future, hope can actually motivate us to take the steps to make it happen. When you think about it, that when a person is filled with hope, or when you're filled with hope, you have that energy that comes along with it. You just find the extra energy to be able to do this and such that you need to do. But where hope is lacking, you don't necessarily have that energy, and you're really struggling. But as soon as something sparks that hope, the energy comes in, and we can certainly act, and we can certainly do, and it motivates us to take these steps to make things happen. Well, historically speaking, there are people who struggle to find hope in their lives typically also struggle with symptoms of depression and or anxiety. I'm not saying that the two always go hand in hand, but it's very, very close, because there is a sense of hopelessness and despair, not only what has happened to us in the past, but also what might happen into the future. And again, throughout history, you know, that kind of perpetual illness was often met with seclusion from the community. You know, just people were separated, you know, or they were placed in a psychiatric facility, and certainly one which further compounded the feelings of this separation and loneliness. And on down through the ages, people who suffered with more serious mental health conditions, well, they were often warehoused in, you know, some sort of communal living situation, and relentless, harmful daily treatment programs. And there was this underlying message way, 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 way back in the day that people who struggled with mental illness were often told that they could never live independently. And they could never work, or they may not even have a family. In fact, in some cases, they were just never allowed to even consider those things. And therefore, this perpetual mental health illness was therefore seen as something that was very bleak and hopeless and miserable. One of my favorite stories is actually Helen Keller, when she was discovered by Ann Sullivan. And if you've ever seen the movie The Miracle Worker, you know what I'm talking about. Just Ann Sullivan herself was, you know, limited in her eyesight. And yet she was hired by the Keller family to work with Helen. But growing up, Ann Sullivan was one who was, let's say, warehoused in one of these psychiatric institutions because they didn't think she would thrive. They didn't think she would survive, let alone thrive. And her eyesight was very, very poor. And so, you know, like I said, it was back in the day when everything had to be perfect. And therefore, if you had some so-called socially recognized limitation, or something that just was out of the norm, like you struggled with eyesight, or if you were deaf or something, then you were sent away in order to get proper treatment. But in Ann Sullivan's case, it just that didn't happen. In fact, she was down in the basement, and it was dark and it was dank down there, and it probably didn't smell that great either. And she didn't thrive at all. She just kind of survived and just, in a sense, psychologically dropped an anchor. And that's how she spent her days, until there was a young nurse who was hired in the psychiatric hospital and just took an interest in Anne. And here she would go down and sit with her when she was on break and talk to her a little bit. And there were times when she even took her lunch down and just sat with Anne and gave her a little bit of her sandwich or whatever she was eating. And they developed a nice friendship. And because of this positive, supportive relationship, Anne started to thrive and she started to get better. And finally, she was allowed to come up from the basement and actually go outside, get some fresh air, and she continued to thrive and thrive and thrive, and eventually was able well enough to leave and went on and did great things. And so she found, another person whom society considered a hopeless case and befriended her, and just a wonderful relationship developed. So hope is very, very powerful, nowadays we understand that regardless of a person's, let's say, depressive or anxious symptoms, a person can actually thrive in a positive and supportive environment. In fact, the more support one receives from family members and their faith communities, the better able they begin to feel, and how they can begin living each day in the present, in hope. And hope is powerful and transformative when it's lived out in this, what I like to call, a shared humanity. Now, I read an article last week that looked at, really focused on mental health first responders who had worked with the victims of both Hurricane Katrina and Hurricane Rita. And the workers there found that during the study, there were actually two types of physical survivors. There were psychological victims and psychological survivors. And psychological victims typically were people who tended to look at life more pessimistically by interpreting what happened to them as a pattern, or let's say a series of unfortunate events that seemed to follow them wherever they went. And yet, on the other hand, the psychological survivors, well, these were people who were more active. They were certainly optimistic, and they looked to the future with hope. Yes, they grieved their losses, which is certainly a healthy response, but they continued to persevere and press on. And again, this is like going back years and years and years ago, but studies were done coming out of the tragedy of 9/11, just what builds resiliency in people when they have go through just horrific times, or if their lives are just filled with like relentless suffering, or if they're living in parts of the world in which there's just mass destruction or, let's say, natural disasters. And I'm kind of blanking on the exact location, exact country, but they looked at, I want to say, somewhere in South America. But this study focused on, there were a tribe of people, and very, very proud people, just had a really nice, rich history to themselves. But where they lived, there were mudslides and an occasional earthquake, and you know, just a lot of instability when it came to the natural surroundings. And what they found was these were actually very resilient people, because whenever they suffered a natural disaster, they would literally climb out of the rubble, brush themselves off, count heads. They would also bury their dead. They would grieve, but then they would move on. They would rebuild. They would replant. Because as they told the researchers, we don't have time. You know, we are resilient people, and life will continue. And in order for that to happen, we have to continue. And so they lived very much in hope, even though, you know, from all outward appearances, it didn't see how this was possible for them. But they found a way. Now, getting back to the first responders who worked with survivors of Hurricane Katrina and Hurricane Rita, the interesting aspect of this study, I thought, was the way people viewed themselves. And it really had nothing to do with how much money they had, or an education level, or how much they had lost, or how many loved ones died in the hurricanes. But instead, it all hinged on the power of hope that a person embraces in their lives. In other words, it goes back to resiliency. And to have hope and to have resiliency is to find these ways to empower yourself in order to face the toughest times and emerge as a survivor. And more than just a survivor, you actually find ways to thrive. And again, it's this attitude of life continues. So what does this have to do with change? Well, everything. When people are hopeful and they have hope that things and people, including ourselves, have this ability to be able to grow and to change and to maintain that change, we are then intrinsically motivated to set certain goals and act on them in order to achieve those goals and reinforce hope and optimism. And that's the power of transformation. It has a momentum all itself. And overall, having hope and holding a more optimistic view of life, not just of ourselves, but also others and the world as a whole, hope certainly acts as a motivator for us to reach our own goals and to make these positive changes in our lives. And yet, hope is more than just a state of mind. It might begin in the mind, with that state of resiliency, but it also should be looked at as a personal strength. It also connects the heart. It also connects the spirit of the person. And hope allows us a resource for motivation to pursue our goals and change, and gives us the optimism and resiliency to kind of pick ourselves up when things don't go as planned. And so hope and transformation go hand in hand. Hope brings about optimism and motivation to reach these goals and to make and maintain positive change in our lives. And what begins as one change in one area can actually gain some traction and create even more of a, let's say, a spiritual transformation or a psychological transformation or even an emotional transformation, because healing is taking place as the more and more hope takes anchor in our lives. And ironically, embracing hope also enhances our capacity for forgiveness, which then enables us to live in gratitude more deeply. And when we are able to live in gratitude, it really opens up the heart to love more fully. And this is where transformation shifts people from being a victim to being a survivor, and for that matter, being one who thrives. So on that note, I just wanted to encourage you that I'd really love to hear your heart on this subject of hope and light, this light shining in the darkness. So if you'd like to come, if you'd like to call in, that number is 888-627-6008, and I will be taking your calls after the break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. And I will be back with you in 1 minute. Okay, welcome back. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Again, before we pick up where we left off with our message of hope, I just want to say a word about next week's show. We will be back Friday, December 18th, 1 week before Christmas. Unbelievable how fast this year is going. So that's next Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, noon Pacific Standard Time. And the subject of that broadcast is going to be the spirit of animals. The spirit of animals, or if you want to flip it around, say animal spirit. And be focusing on what animals keep showing up in our dreams, or what animals do you seem to connect with more than others? And, it's fascinating when you consider how our ancestors often studied animal characteristics in order to better understand how God often works through animals in order to answer our prayers or to help us. Okay, so invite you to tune in next Friday when we look at the spirit of animals. Well, earlier in the broadcast, we were talking about the power of hope, and especially, you know, hope and resiliency during difficult times. And started off at the top of the hour, I should say, with, you know, just asking you what's on your Christmas list and, you know, what's your wish list and things like that. And wanted to ask you if you've ever heard or do you remember the song, "All I Want for Christmas Is My Two Front Teeth." Okay, now that you got that tune in your head and you'll hear it for the rest of the day, I apologize for that, but it's a cute song, of course, sung by a child that the only thing I want in this whole wide world is just my two front teeth so I can wish you Merry Christmas. And, you know, we often ask, you know, each other, our friends and acquaintances or colleagues, like, what do you want for Christmas? And we realize that it's not a question, you know, that's not just for children anymore, but a lot of adults get kind of excited about that too. And most of us have lived long enough to learn that what we find and receive in life depends largely on what are we seeking? What are we going after? What are we pursuing? And something else that we are caught up in, not just the season of Hanukkah or the season of Christmas, but this is also the season of Advent. And the message of Advent certainly provides us the opportunity to prepare for the coming of Christ by clarifying our response to a question. Yeah, these are things I might like for Christmas, but what do I really need for Christmas? And perhaps during this season of Advent and the season of Christmas and season of Hanukkah, we perhaps recognize that our greatest need is hope. And hope is one of our greatest needs that we have just in this time of the year and this year of COVID. And what a year it's been. I mean, just pick up any newspaper this morning or later on, or just watch the news. And I guarantee you that you'll hear or you'll read about a world which is still divided along ethnic or nationalistic or religious or some sort of culturalistic line. And a world where there's still a lot of people out there who want to wreak havoc and to have people live in terror and fear. And a world in which thousands and thousands and thousands of people are starving in their own lands. And a world in which the harsh reality of these times, and certainly in 2020, force a lot of people to ask, well, exactly where is God in a world like this? You know, is there any hope for the future? Or are things just going to get progressively worse? Well, it was kind of interesting that if you've ever noticed that when these messages of, well, things are just going to get worse, and, you know, more and more negativity keeps getting ramped up, that's when the message of hope is often spoken the loudest. And perhaps that's because in order to find hope, we have to face those places, even within our own lives, that are, let's say, barren or cold or broken. One of the most powerful lessons that was ever communicated to me actually came from a colleague of mine who once told me a story about visiting her grandmother's farm during one winter when she was a little girl. And she said it was a particularly sad time in her life, and she was just full of despair, and she just couldn't find hope anywhere. And one day her grandmother said to her, "Come on, get your coat. We're going to go for a walk." And so as the two of them walked, they walked across this field. And she said that she noticed how hard and cold the ground was under her feet. And at one point, her grandmother stopped and told her to kneel down and place your hands on the ground and feel the life. And when she did, she told her grandmother that she couldn't feel anything except the cold, hard dirt. Well, then her grandmother said, okay, if you can't feel the life, then, you know, lean down a little bit more and put your ear to the ground and listen for the life. And again, she did what she was told, but she replied that she couldn't hear anything. And then she said it was after she couldn't hear anything that her grandmother cupped her face with her hands and said, my dear sweet child, I want you to always remember it's often when the land seems most barren and cold and dark that life is quietly growing. And sure enough, when she returned to her grandmother's farm in the spring, she could see that tender new life was shooting up. So no matter how long, you know, the road, no matter how dark the night, no matter how hopeless the world may feel, hope always looks and listens for life. Hope shines in the brightest ways when the hour is the darkest. And when you think about it, hope motivates us when discouragement comes our way for one reason or another. Hope also energizes us when the body is tired or to the point of exhaustion. Hope sweetens when, let's say, bitterness just kind of takes a bite out of us. But hope also sings when all the melodies are gone, when there is no, let's say, seemingly music. Hope sings loud and clear. And hope certainly believes when all the evidence is very, very limited, or the evidence says, no, this isn't going to happen. Hope is there and saying, yeah, but it could happen. In fact, it probably will happen. It's just a matter of time. And hope also listens for the answers when nobody is talking. And hope climbs over obstacles when really nobody is helping. Hope endures hardship when nobody is caring. And hope smiles confidently when nobody is laughing. Hope reaches for answers when nobody is asking. Hope presses towards victory when nobody is encouraging. Hope dares to give when nobody is sharing. And hope brings victory when no one is winning. Hope is that powerful because hope is transformative. Hope is not dependent on circumstances. And in fact, hope loves to do the opposite. It instills in us this, yeah, but that's what I'm looking at. That's what I'm hearing. But that's not the end of the story. And there's, you know, this energy that comes in that fills our hearts with hope. And certainly fills us with just this renewed sensation of, yeah, we can persevere. Yes, we can press on. Yes, we can grieve where we need to grieve, but that's not the end of the story. Because hope always places us firmly in the present, and we confidently go from one day to the next, keeping our eye on what's most important. Well, as we're getting close to the Christmas season, I thought it would be nice. I don't know if any of you have heard this story or not, but I just wanted to share with you that, yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus. And a lot of people would like to argue like, no, Santa Claus is made up and things like that. And it's like, no, there was a real live historical Saint Nicholas. Okay, just like the song says, jolly old Saint Nicholas. Okay, so just, he was quite a character during his time, deeply, deeply devoted to Christianity. In fact, he eventually became a bishop. And so everybody knew him as Saint Nicholas. And he was also known for helping people in need. And after his death, the legend of how he gave gifts to others just kept growing and growing and growing. And this is why we give gifts today. And Saint Nicholas transformed into the legendary character, you know, as we call Santa Claus, who brings Christmas presents to children all around the world. And that's part of his legacy. And this is why we do what we do. And it's also likened to the three wise men bringing gifts to the baby Jesus. Okay, but getting back to Saint Nicholas, who was a genuine historical person, his early life was kind of a mystery. You know, he was quite a character, but yet you talk about somebody who lived in hope and lived in peace, and his hope motivated, or I should say, was motivated by the way he instilled hope in others. In fact, you could probably say that his whole life was characterized of just reminding people of that fact, you know, that reminding that, you know, tough times do not last, difficult times do not last, hope does, promises from God last. And so Nicholas, he was born about 280 AD and in the town Patera, I'm going to butcher this last name here, Lycia. It's an area that's part of present-day Turkey. And he was more or less, I would say, born into tragedy, but he had certainly seen his fair share, because Nicholas had lost both of his parents as a young man, and reportedly used his inheritance then to help the poor and the sick. And as I mentioned just a little while ago, Nicholas was a devout Christian, and he later served as the Bishop of Myra. It's a city that's now called Demre. And there are many legends out there about St. Nicholas of Myra. There's one story, perhaps this is the most famous story, but one story tells how he helped three poor sisters. Now, again, legend has it that he was walking alone at night, minding his own business, and, you know, at that time, I guess people kept their windows open, and he heard these three sisters, you know, talking upstairs, and they were just filled with, you know, tears and like, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? And apparently their father didn't have enough money to pay for the dowries of his three daughters, and they were talking amongst themselves of selling themselves into some form of servitude. And Nicholas heard this, and he said, no, this is not going to happen. I'm going to do something to help these three sisters. And so Nicholas goes back to his house, and he puts together the money that he had into three small little pouches of money, I would say, of equal amounts. And the next night he was walking along and he saw the window of the house open where these three sisters were talking. And he tosses the bag of coins up there. And, you know, it's I wouldn't say it's pennies from heaven. But when one, you know, sister found it, she was like, oh, yes, now I have enough money for a dowry. I do not have to sell myself into servitude. And again, legend says the next night, Nicholas did the same thing, walking along, came back to the house. The window was open. He tossed the bag of coins up there. And the second sister, you know, was just so grateful that she didn't have to sell herself into servitude, that she too had money for a dowry. And the following night, he did the same thing for the third sister. And so this way, the father had enough money for the dowry to have his daughters marry and to spare them from a life of shame. And so, yeah, I would say this is probably the most popular story out of them all. And another story is that, you know, later the father saw St. Nicholas and thanked him for his kindness. Now, how he knew it was Nicholas who tossed the money up there, I don't know. But that's, again, this is legend. And another story also reported that Nicholas also saved three men who were falsely imprisoned and sentenced to death. And the number three is significant, you know, with the three men and the three sisters. And if you ever go to a pawn shop, or if you ever see a pawn shop, you'll see, you know, in somewhere in the sign, there's three bells that are hanging down. And that points to these stories of how St. Nicholas three times saved people from, let's say, miserable circumstances. So, like I said, that's just a nice legend. But yes, Virginia, there is a St. Nicholas. Now, it is believed that Nicholas died somewhere around like 343 AD, you know, mid fourth century. And over the years, the stories of his miracles and work for the poor spread to other parts of the world. And he became known as the protector of children and sailors, and was associated with gift giving. And he was a very popular saint in Europe until the time of the Reformation in the 1500s. The Reformation, you know, was what brought about Protestantism, which turned away from the practice of honoring saints. However, St. Nicholas remained an important figure in Holland. And interestingly, the Dutch continue to celebrate the feast of St. Francis, or not the feast of St. Francis, sorry, the feast of St. Nicholas on December 6th, just a few days ago. And it was a common practice for children to put out their shoes the night before. And in the morning, they would discover that St. Nicholas would leave gifts there for them in their shoes. And so the Dutch immigrants brought the legend of St. Nicholas, and it eventually became known as Sint Nicolaas, or by his nickname, Sinterklaas, which eventually came to America in the 1700s. And the legend, the story of St. Nicholas went through many transformations in American history. And Sinterklaas eventually became Santa Claus. And instead of giving gifts on December 6th, he became part of the Christmas holiday. And an interesting poem was written about St. Nicholas. I believe it was like 1820, somewhere around there, by Clement Clark Moore. And he describes St. Nicholas as a jolly, heavy man who comes down the chimney to leave presents for deserving children and drives a sleigh pulled by flying reindeer. Okay, here we go with the legend of Santa Claus. Now, the cartoonist Thomas Nast added to the St. Nicholas legend with an 1881 drawing of Santa. He's wearing a red suit with white fur trim. And once a kind and charitable bishop, St. Nicholas had become the Santa Claus that we know today. And perhaps that you're also familiar with, of course, the advertising that Coca-Cola did when they started promoting Coca-Cola that had real Coke, if you know what I mean, in the drink. And so to promote sales, you had this fat, jolly old man, big beard, big belly, you know, dressed in red and flying reindeer and the whole bit, holding a Coke and drinking it down. And so that was a brilliant marketing scheme. And it's just, you know, even, you know, today, even this year, you'll see Coca-Cola signs with Santa Claus on it as a way to promote, you know, the soft drink in, you know, this time of the year. So again, it's, you know, yes, there is a St. Nicholas, and he very much wanted to live in hope. And just a strong figure of one who lived in gratitude and grace and love. And he did what he was able to do in order to help others live in that same spirit of hope. And that's really the lesson for us. You know, a lot of people think with so many problems in the world and so many things going on and so many issues and concerns and so much pain and suffering, where do you begin? You know, like where do you get started? And does it matter what you do to, you know, for one person, you know, after, because there's so much pain? And by all means, it does matter what we do. Because let's say, even if we've lived our whole lives and we're able to touch one person's life and allow, say, the grace of God to come in and just create this wonderful transformation of hope and forgiveness and gratitude and love, it is definitely worth it. It is not a life that had been wasted. So in taking our cue from St. Nicholas that he was able to do with the means of what he had in order to help alleviating the suffering of people here and there, let us also look to our lives. And we may not be able to throw, you know, sacks of coins through windows, you know, that we may not be able to do that. But, you know, what in other ways are we able to take what we have been given or what we have been blessed with and how we can use that to be a blessing to somebody else? So I'm convinced that hope comes in all shapes and sizes. It's not limited by any means, and it's certainly, you know, shouldn't be limited by our creativity. In fact, it should be spurred on with our creativity. And so I just invite you throughout this season of Advent, this Hanukkah season, this season of Christmas that's coming, to look at creative ways that you can be a blessing to somebody who is struggling to find hope in their lives. Well, I want to leave you with a poem that I also found in preparing for this broadcast that speaks about the power of hope. And it's entitled The Power of Hope by Leonard Rebello. And Leonard writes, "Looking into the distant future, something my stupid past didn't see. May the outcry of my experience allow God to transform me. I long to be alive, for within I was dead. Darkness, emptiness was my company, and each day I dread. Yet walking with a long-lost soul, understanding nothing at hand, I once had a goal. My dreams, they all turned to sand. I seek the faiths of soothing comfort to captivate my vast, distressed mind. I cannot give up on this beautiful life because it is hope I must find." Well, you have been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. I am your host, Dr. James Houck, and so I encourage you to find the hope that is always there in perhaps even the most unlikely places, but hope can be found. So until next week, I pray that you all are safe, that you all behave yourselves, and I will talk with you next week. Take care, and God bless.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander on over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Friday at noon Pacific time on PBS Radio TV.